Hello and welcome once again to one of Casmir's Pondering Procurement podcasts. My name is Graham Crawshaw and delighted to be here for another episode. Today I've got very special guest Malcolm Harrison, who is going to talk to us about the role of mentoring when developing sort of broader procurement leadership. Malcolm, welcome, and I'll let you introduce yourself for those few people that don't know you.
Oh, thanks, Graham. I'm sure there are lots of people out there that don't know me. So, yes, I'm Malcolm Harrison. I've spent the last 4.5 years leading the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply, who I will still say are the preeminent organisation in terms of delivering technical skills in procurement and supply worldwide. But perhaps before that is what's more important, because I've had a slightly unusual career in that whilst I've done 3 pretty large global chief procurement officer roles, I've also done 4 chief executive roles. So I've got a quite unusual balance of somebody that's got a lot of broad organizational business experience, as well as a deep love, hunger, specialism, excellence in procurement and supply.
Excellent. My goodness, what a combination. And you're right, that is unusual. Because, I mean, I'll just think of my own career. I've just spent time in procurement. And arguably, yeah, maybe I've missed out on something.
Graham, it was never planned. You know, this is never how I thought it would end up. But, you know, I would say, you know, people sometimes ask me, well, Malcolm, you know, what was the sort of the most important career move you made? And as I have a tendency to do, I say, well, actually, I've got 2 answers to that. I mean, the first one was spending those first 10, 11 years in an incredibly rich environment, which really focused on coaching and training and developing people. And most of that was in very operational procurement and supply roles. But then the most important decision I think I ever made was probably in my mid-30s, I got the opportunity to go off and lead a business unit, and to run an organization. We turned over about 140 million. I think we had about 3,000 customers. I had about a couple of hundred people working for me. I didn't have responsibility for procurement because it was a business unit, which, if you like, sort of relied upon those resources from the center of the organization. But I learned so much, Graham, in that. So right about the importance of what you have to do when you're thinking about leading teams, when you're leading a business. And yes, I could see where procurement added real value. And I can also see actually where procurement, unfortunately, very often got it wrong in terms of their delivery.
Wow. Okay. That's a great combination of experience to put you where you are today. So let's start by talking about the challenges in the procurement profession and sort of how they've changed over the last 20 years. And I'm glad we're focusing on 20. It's the 20th anniversary year of CASME running roundtables. And my goodness, we have seen such change. Some of it good, some of it still needing to be developed further. What's your take on that point, Malcolm?
So, look, Graham, I think you're right. I think 20 years actually is a really good time span to take. Because if you go back 20 years, go back to the early noughties, I mean, we were all talking about things like sourcing. We were all talking about e-auctions. Some of the first technology that was coming in, which was all about driving price down. Low-cost country sourcing was about how did you acquire things at lower prices. And go back to that period in time, and I think there was a distinct excess of supply compared to demand. Therefore, most things were available reasonably plentifully. And therefore, yes, you could get away with that focus on price, cost, because the context allowed you to do that. Now, roll forward to where we are today, and it's a very different context. It's a very different context because we've had a pandemic. We've got 2 wars going on at the moment. We have got serious disruption in global supply chains, and we've got imbalances in supply and demand. for a whole host of reasons. And I haven't even started talking about climate change and the impact climate change is having in terms of some of the supply criteria. I think the other big change is clearly the importance of sustainability and the importance of equity, diversity, and inclusion, and the pressures that is putting on everyone to be able to operate in ways that meet those challenges, those needs. And not a day goes past without people talking about sustainability and the importance of the ESG goals. So that context is quite different to where we were 20 years ago.
Mm.
And what it means for the profession is a much more complex agenda, much more of a business agenda, much more focus on risk and risk mitigation, and much more focus on ensuring that when you establish a supply chain, that it's resilient, that it's going to be resilient against changes in the context, changes in the environment that we're operating in. It's able to withstand those and make sure you're able to bring to your organization the goods and services that you need. Great. One of the things I learned very early on in my career, and somebody said to me, Malcolm, the most expensive thing you could ever buy is the one that doesn't turn up or doesn't work when it does turn up. I'm talking 40 years ago now, not 20 years ago. And I think that importance is something that perhaps has not had enough focus. Certainly 20 years ago, it wasn't getting enough focus. It's beginning to get it again now, but it does bring with it a need for different skills to meet the challenges of today's context.
Yeah. I mean, certainly we see that whole balance of power between procurement and the supplier and the way that it sort of teeters from one to the other. And if anything, it's firmly with the supplier at the moment for many, many different types of categories. And therefore, the days of just demanding, and as you say, supply being plentiful and just demanding that your order is delivered, it's very different now. And do suppliers want to supply you, or would they rather supply someone else?
Exactly. And that's because there's this imbalance in supply and demand. And if there's an imbalance in supply and demand, you need to have, as the buyer, as the procuring organization, you need to have a strategy which allows you to be able to be confident about your supply lines, confident about your supply chains. And if that supply isn't there, well, hey, that's much more challenging, much, much more challenging.
Okay, so what we're saying is that the environment has changed, the pressure, the business requirements have changed, and therefore procurement professionals, they need to keep up with that change and therefore are going to be requiring a very different skill set today compared to 20 years ago.
So, yes and no.
Okay.
Well, no, and I think this is quite important because what we don't want to do is have this conversation and try and tell everybody that it's different for everybody. Yeah, because it's not. Because some organisations, I think, were getting this right 40 years ago, we're getting it right 20 years ago, and we're getting it right now. But it's not everybody. And I do think that is a really important thing to recognise. So there are really good organisations out there that do this really well.
And I would totally agree with you, Malcolm. I totally agree with you on that. But of course, the suppliers themselves are changing, so they are behaving differently and treating and working with procurement differently. So I always think, you've got to have both aligned to a certain extent.
You do, Graham. You do. And when I say yes and no, I guess let's talk about the sort of the skills that I think are important now and going forward. I guess what I'm trying to say is, really good organisations that always had this focus on resilience, had this focus on value, I think they had those skills, because without those skills, you couldn't deliver on having resilient supply chains and making sure you were always delivering value. And I think the point about value is really important because this was the other, I think, big change in context. You go back 20 years, everybody was talking about savings, and savings and compliance. And procurement was seen as you were the engine of savings for the organization, and you had a role in terms of ensuring compliance. It was almost a policing type role. Now, the context allows you to do that. To me, though, it's never should it have been a focus just on savings. It should always have been a focus on value. Mm. And if you always focus on value, then sometimes that means savings. How can you save money on something you've never ever bought before?
Right. Yeah. No, it's
you don't have a reference point. You can buy it better. You can achieve better value for your organization. You might be able to do better than the budget you set, but yeah, then how accurate was the budget you set in the first place? But but to claim a cash saving,
it hasn't done us any favors at all.
No, it hasn't. And,
this whole drive for reporting savings that was so inflated, so ridiculous, we lost credibility.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest shames for the profession. And I do see that starting to change. And I do see people starting to talk much more about value. Yes, they're talking about resilience. Yes, they're talking about sustainability. Yes, they're talking about satisfying, you know, internal stakeholder needs. But they're also talking about value, Graham. They're talking about how can the profession ensure that they're bringing value to their organizations from the supply base. And yes, that can be about getting best value for money, but it can also be about bringing in innovation from your supply base. Now, if you're going to buy innovation, that's very different to putting four suppliers into an RFP process where the main focus is on lowest price. Yeah. Hey, if I'm an organization that's investing in innovation, investing in new products, am I going to say, and I'm going to sell it to the person that's going to give me the lowest price for it? Well, of course I'm not.
No. Hence that balance of power, or the balance between procurement and suppliers. Suppliers are being much more selective as to who they wish to supply and work with. And therefore, individuals, procurement professionals, have got to have that skill set to be able to respond and effectively work with those suppliers that are developing their own businesses.
Exactly. And that's where I have my no, and that's where I disagree, because I would argue that if you were working in an organization that was very good at getting innovation from your supply base, then the people that were undertaking those procurement exercises, managing those relationships, always had a focus on value, not a focus on lowest price. Because you're not going to acquire good innovation if your focus is on lowest price.
What are those skills that we're talking about? Because I think that needs to be defined so that people really do understand. And those that are perhaps earlier on in their careers can then work out, well, actually, are they making sure they've got the right skills for moving forward?
So the business skills. In my vocabulary, my nomenclature, they're business skills. People talk about soft skills, and people say, well, yeah, everybody needs these soft skills. Well, I don't actually like the word soft, Graham, because some of these I don't think are particularly soft. They're not sort of cuddly and fluffy. You know, that some of these are actually quite hard business skills. There's a saying that really good procurement people are assertive. They're not aggressive, they're assertive. They make sure that they do get an understanding of their needs across to their supplier, but they also are very good at listening, and they listen to what's important to their supplier. And that may then help them decide how they're best going to manage that supplier relationship. Or indeed, if you listen to and understand your supplier very well, you may discover, well, that's not the right supplier for you because your objectives are not aligned. So they're business skills. And importantly, they are different to technical skills. And technical skills, somebody like SIPS, I think, delivers those technical skills extremely well. It's a very good curriculum. It's well thought through. It's well researched. It's based on lots of good practice, lots of evidence. It's updated. But that's only the technical part. And the technical part, to me, is necessary, but it's not sufficient. So what are those business skills? Communications, change management, stakeholder engagement. Those are perhaps three of the most important ones to me. And these are skills which are all about listening. They're all about understanding. They're all about communicating. They're all about how do you build relationships? How do you work with people, not against them? Now, working with people doesn't mean you just go, yes, yes, yes. Sometimes you disagree.
Right.
But you need to know how to disagree and disagree in a positive way, which ultimately achieves an outcome which meets your needs, as well as being something that the supplier says, yeah, okay, I can sign up to that. I can work in that environment, those conditions. So a lot of it to me comes back to communications, change management, stakeholder engagement, relationship management. It's those business skills which I think are incredibly important if you're going to be able to deliver in this new context.
Right. I mean, totally agree with all of those, but especially the relationship side. And I think that is, it's a complex one. We use it as a word, but it's not easy to be effective at developing relationships. And of course, we're talking about relationships with internal stakeholders, relationships with suppliers. It's a vastly different approach depending who you're talking to. And I always think one of the great things about procurement is that you've got that opportunity to build a relationship with the CEO, with some very senior people within the organization. But you also need to have that ability to talk to the person that perhaps is mopping the floor, because you may want to get some insight. So it's at all levels to understand what's going on and really understanding about the business. So that relationship, I think, is key. And actually, Malcolm, the good thing about that, AI isn't going to replace relationship management. Yeah. Everyone is talking about how everything's going to change, but actually the people and building the relationships, that's really what it is going forward. That's what we're hearing very much at a good number of our CASME events.
Yeah, no, and that is entirely consistent with what I've been hearing for some years now, Graham.
Right.
So, yes, those business skills, those relationship skills, and relationships internally as well as externally. And one of the things that, yeah, I often say to people is, you know, when I did some of my large chief procurement officer roles, the more senior I got, the less I ended up talking to suppliers, because I found that all of the relationships I was having to manage were internal ones. Yeah, it was internal stakeholders. Or if I was talking externally, it was talking to shareholders, it was talking to analysts. It was a very different group of individuals that I was talking to in relationship I was having to manage. Because the nature of the role, and again, maybe I was lucky, the organizations I was in, it was a business role. It was a business leadership role. It even moved on beyond being a procurement leadership role. I was part of the team that was involved in leading and running the business. Now, is that going to exist in every organization? No, it's not. And you would probably say to me that, Malcolm, you were lucky. You were lucky to have worked for some very good organizations. And I would say to you, well, yes, I was even luckier to have worked for some really good leaders, because I think that some of these skills are difficult to acquire in a procurement function which is very focused around savings and compliance. And therefore, it depends upon the leader of the function, or even the boss of the leader of the function, to make sure that you're going to have the ability to learn those skills, and that people are going to put the focus on learning those skills. Because if people don't see the skills as important, guess what? They don't invest the time and the effort in providing the right training, the right coaching, the right mentoring. You know, the ways that you can then develop these skills. And the other thing that I will say, and I guess this is go back to my own experience, Graham, is you said, yes, I have had a fairly unusual mix of experiences for somebody in the procurement profession. I think some of these skills are more difficult to learn if you're working in procurement, or they're easier to learn if you're in a sales role or an operations role, because you're in a different position in terms of that relationship. You're on a different side of the table, and you can learn so much from being on both sides of the table. Now, not everybody's going to get a chance to do that, but no. I do think it makes it more challenging for people that are only going to be able to progress their careers and pursue their careers within a procurement function. And therefore, there is this need to make sure that for those people, and that is probably the majority of people in the profession, for those people, we can find ways of providing the training, the skills development that they will benefit from hugely in terms of having this better, broader set of business skills.
Fascinating. And I think you've probably given people something to think about there, because we talk about sales as being very similar to procurement, but just slightly different. And maybe it ought to be part of someone's career plan to make sure that they get that experience in another business function to get a broader perspective and not just remain focused that, I've got to go up the procurement ladder. Maybe in order to really get up that ladder, you need to take a step and do something a little bit different, but recognizing those skills are complementary.
A personal view, it definitely helps, but I don't think it's for everybody. And I don't think everybody's going to get that opportunity. And I think it's important that you recognize that. Because if you say, the only way you're going to be a chief procurement officer in the future is you've got to go and spend 3 years in a sales role or 2 years in an operations role, it's not going to happen, Greg. It's just not going to happen.
No.
I think it's not realistic to believe that it's not realistic to believe it's going to happen, but secondly, it's not realistic to think that that's what everybody wants to do and everybody feels comfortable doing.
Mm.
But to pick up on your point, I agree with you. I do think business breadth, the breadth of understanding and breadth of skills is very important. And this is not a technical qualification. You cannot teach this the same way that you teach a qualification, because so much of this is it's about learned and lived experience. It's about what you learn in an operating environment when you're faced with those challenges. And you take your very good technical skills, but then it's about how you apply them and how you apply them in the context and how you exercise judgment as to what's the best way to achieve the particular outcome you want to achieve in the context that you find yourself.
So how can you accelerate that? Because I guess everyone listening will be keen to think, that I want to get a bit of that. I want to accelerate my ability. I've got my technical skills, got my qualifications, got everything in place, but I want to accelerate or do the right thing that's going to give me that opportunity to experience the breadth of business acumen that we're talking about.
So that's probably the most important question that we're trying to talk about and answer today, because I don't think there is one single or simple answer. How do you, as you say, how do you acquire these skills? You know, we've agreed there's a need for them. We've agreed that they are business skills. Some people call them soft skills, but but they're a much broader set of skills. Now, a lot of it depends upon the organization you're working in. Some organizations are very good at leadership development, but not everybody. And even in those organizations which are good at leadership development, they don't always have brilliant leaders. And the ideal solution or situation is to have both. It's both to have the focus on development, but also to have the leaders, because it's leaders and really good leaders that can coach and mentor. So coaching and mentoring, and we might want to talk about that. I think
we need to actually welcome on that. Yeah,
I think that's part of it. Now, the other part for me is, well, there are some tools and techniques here that you learn as part of being trained as a leader, they're probably more leadership skills than being a leader, because you need them. I think you need them actually not just as a leader. I think you need them lower down the organization as well. And those are some of the skills that you can acquire through various executive development programs. Though I think it's a shame, I haven't seen too many executive development programs that are focused towards the more specific needs of people working in procurement and supply. So there's perhaps a bit of an opportunity there to try and develop, I think, some better executive development, executive leadership type programs, which are oriented towards the procurement and supply profession. But we're going to talk about coaching and mentoring, weren't we?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's start, because I get confused with the difference because they're often used interchangeably and it just gets a bit confusing. But they're very different activities, aren't they?
They are. And the easiest way to think about it, I would suggest, is the difference between a pull and a push. And coaching in its purest form is the pull. If you're being coached, then your coach is not going to share with you any of their experience. They're going to get you to come up with the answer. So they're going to ask lots of open questions. They're going to tease out of you. They're going to tease out of you what the solutions are. They might help you think in a different way. But what they're not going to do is say, "Oh, well, when I was in this situation, I did this." Coaching is all about pull. Mentoring is much more about push. So mentoring is where you say, "Well, actually, yes. Look, well, when I was in this situation, and this happened to us, this is what we did, and this is what we thought about." And you might want to think about how you do that in your environment. So mentoring is much more about sharing experiences, about sharing what you hope are very relevant and practical examples which will help an individual progress, but it's very much based on experience. Whereas coaching is all about getting you as the individual being coached to come up with the solutions.
Okay. I think I've got that. That certainly sounds a good focus. But I'm a bit concerned, I guess, on the sharing experience. There's got to be a balance, hasn't there? How is that sharing done in a way that it's not just saying you've done an amazing job, why don't you?
Yeah, you're right. And I'm kind of probably deliberately trying to make it black and white so as to show the difference between the two, but it's not black and white. This is shades of grey, and I would argue that the very best leaders both coach and mentor. They might direct. Right. Well, actually, they might be quite instructive. Not so much instructive, but they might. Somebody who's quite demanding and delivering instructions. But good leaders, I think, both coach and mentor, and they'll coach in terms of getting an individual to develop a greater set of skills by helping them think through what the solutions are in a particular situation. But they'll also mentor by coming along and saying, "Well, you know, had you thought about this?" Now, I've worked with some organisations that put a real focus into mentoring, and one of the things that I guess I've done and we learned in those situations was that, one, as mentors, we were all trained and we were given specific training as mentors. It wasn't something you were just sort of put into. The other thing was the way it was set up was such that the mentor was absolutely not your line manager. And therefore, it was kind of a bit of a safe environment or a safer environment, where you as the mentee could, you know, ask those crazy questions which you might not want to ask your boss. So,
okay, no, that makes sense. So safe environment.
Safe environment. Now, what that can, of course, also mean is some of the things that you might learn from a mentor might not be as directly relevant as what you would learn from your boss. And therefore, you as the mentee need to be able to sort of synthesize that and say, well, yeah, that's actually, that was great. That was really useful to know. But in this particular context, and I don't think that's quite right. But I'm going to store that away because it might come in useful in another situation. And it's all part of building that much broader skill set, that set of business skills, without having the time and the ability to have a whole host of different experiences yourself, which allow you to acquire all of it, because it's just not, I think, realistic to imagine that every individual is going to get the chance to get all of those experiences directly firsthand on their own.
Question, how does someone know that actually having a mentor would be very beneficial to them?
If you look at many organisations, maybe most is an extreme, but many organisations, you'll very often find that the most senior people in those organisations do have mentors. And whether those mentors are people that they've informally developed relationships with over their careers, it's very often a former boss that they happen to get on with particularly well. Or sometimes it can be formally structured. There are organisations out there that provide coaching and mentoring, mainly to CEOs and CFOs. It tends to be that level of the organisation. So my argument would be, well, if it exists, it goes at that level of the organisation. Well, why can't you take those same techniques and same practices and bring them far, far further down the organisation? So yes, to the leader of a procurement and supply function, a chief procurement officer, a chief supply chain officer, but also to the people in their teams. Because, as I think we said earlier on, these business skills are not something which are exclusively important to the individual leading the function. So I think most CEOs and CFOs know. They know about the importance of mentoring. They know about the importance of coaching.
Right.
Now, whether that gets disseminated down through their organisations or not, I don't know. And
will in some, but not in others. I think that's
right. And what doesn't, I think, help is that today there's perhaps not, there aren't sufficient mentors or sufficient coaches or sufficient executive development programs which are really well orientated towards the procurement and supply profession.
But if someone is wanting to progress their career, it's definitely an opportunity, and therefore they almost need to take responsibility to find out and see if they can seek someone that will provide some mentoring for them. Even if it is in a different function or even presumably different company, it still works.
Yes, I agree. And I think the things about mentoring in particular, and this is again where mentoring differs from coaching, I think coaching is very much a one-on-one activity. Mentoring can sometimes be done in cohorts. It can be done in, there are mentoring circles where you have groups of three, four, five people who actually learn as much from each other as they do from whoever the mentor is. Because I say it is about learning experiences rather than coaching, which is much more about developing you as the individual and getting you to think in a different way, which is something I think you have to do one-on-one. Now, don't get me wrong, I think mentoring one-on-one could be very effective as well, but I believe there is a place for mentoring in a cohort, in a group, as well as there is one-on-one. Now, Bullock Sips have put some focus into mentoring, And that, I believe, was directly based on people in the profession saying they needed it, they wanted it. So I actually think a lot of people, Graham, know that they need it. They know they benefited from it. I suspect it's as much an issue about the lack of provision of the right type of mentoring as it is
right.
about people knowing whether they have a need or not. And you know, go back, personal experience here from many, many years ago. I'm so glad I worked for an organization that when they introduced mentoring said, well, the first thing we're going to do, Malcolm, was we're going to send you on a mentoring course. Yeah, we're going to give you a set of skills, a new set of skills, a different set of skills to help you be an effective mentor. Because I do think
right.
the mentee you know, deserves to be mentored by somebody that has the right skills. It's not just somebody who says, oh, well, when I was in that situation, I did this. It's not as simple as that. Again, answer your question. You know, if I'm somebody working in the profession, thinks I need benefits from mentoring, well, how do I kind of start? Because I don't think there is the great provision of mentoring out there. And I think there's a much greater need, a need sitting there than the need that's actually been identified and is obvious to one and all. So where do you start? You talk to your boss, and you talk to the HR function, and then you know, your HR function, if you have an HR function, and most organisations do, you should be focusing very much on development, how you develop your people, and mentoring is absolutely part of how you do that. Look at the HR profession, look at the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, they will have very good advice on mentoring. Because that's something that HR professionals should do, or should know all about and know about how you provide it for an organisation. There are ways of finding out about this, but being personal view, I don't think there is anywhere near enough provision compared to the need. And if you really want to take it to the extreme, just look at what's available in terms of coaching. I know it's coaching rather than mentoring, but just look at what's available in terms of coaching for the likes of CEOs and CFOs, and then think about what's available to leaders and advanced practitioners in procurement and supply.
So, Malcolm, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And yeah, if as a result of listening to this, I'm sure there'll be people then asking for different mentoring availability and options there. Is it a one-off? Would you say that once someone has been through a process of mentoring, that's it, they're done? What's your view on that? What's the longevity of it?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it can be a one-off. But then nor do I think it has to be something that you do every month or every week. It's definitely not a one-off. And to me, this is all about, because these are business skills, these are skills that you learn and use differently depending upon the context that you're operating in and the context of your organization and the context for the profession. And as we started this talk, we said, yeah, it's very different now than it was 20 years ago. So context changes, and context is so important, right? So because these are business skills, I think it is about continuing professional development. It is about experience. Is it about practice? These are learned skills rather than taught skills. And therefore, no, it is something that you should be focusing on a continuous basis. But that doesn't mean you have to do it every month or every week.
And presumably applies at all levels too. Let's just to clarify that point. I know we've said it's more established at CEO level, but then you said it'd be great if it could be cascaded down. But those starting their careers almost need to tune into this mindset of the value that mentoring provide them.
Probably not the lowest levels. I think acquire some good technical skills first.
That makes sense.
Get those. It's a bit like passing your driving test, isn't it? You know, the old saying is that you once you've passed your driving test, then you learn to drive. In other words, that's been
right. It's exactly the same. Yeah.
So I think it's exactly the same. So I think it's important that you get those technical skills first. It's important that you start to get some real operational organizational experience. And then, yes, you need to build that set of business skills. And one of the ways that you do that is mentoring, coaching. Once you get into the more senior leadership levels in the profession, yeah, I would argue there's more of a need. And I would argue there's more of a need because for two reasons. One, because actually it's far more important that you as the leader of the profession do have this broad set of skills. And sometimes people end up in those roles without having that broad set of skills or without having that broad set of skills sufficiently developed. But secondly, there are far fewer places that you can go to get that set of skills. Given what I was saying earlier on about, you know, bosses, leaders having a really important role in terms of mentoring and coaching. Well, typically you only have one of those, and you know, you don't always have a great boss, do you? I think there are fewer places for you to be able to go to acquire the skills when you're in those most senior leadership roles in the profession, and that's when you need the skills most as well.
Malcolm, thank you. You've given a lot of great advice, plenty of food for thought for people that have been listening. And I think it's right to challenge procurement professionals that are going to become future business leaders as to how they build on their technical skills, but then get the business skills and how they can get that. And clearly mentoring is one way to fast track that through so that you can get that experience and learning from others. So thank you for sharing that today.
Oh, and Graham, thank you. It's been really good to talk to you. And I think I'll leave you with just one important point. These skills were always important to the profession. The difference is in the context now, and the context now compared to how it was 20 years ago. And as we said, 20 years is important to CASME because this is your 20th year. The context now means that these skills are even more important than they were 20 years ago.
We hope you enjoyed this CASME podcast. All episodes can be found on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss a future one. If you'd like to find out more about CASME's procurement events, research and benchmarking, get in touch with us at casme.com.